Thank you very much, Rabbi Ramstein, for the gracious introduction. I want to thank my mother for writing it.
There we go. I'm going to give out, while I talk, I'm going to give out something that's really going to be the format that we're going to be using. I think I made enough.
Okay, and it is a pleasure to be here. You didn't get your. Did I give a bunch here? We may have to. Anybody have any extras? Yeah, okay.
Would it help if I. Ma'am, is there a Xerox place?
What I thought was, I was told that it would not be a very big crowd. So I thought it's much more fun if we try to do something a little interactive. It also sort of gets me off the hook. Sometimes when I speak, I'm reminded of the classic story of the kid who was caught cheating on a test and was about to get thrown out of school, but he had his day in court with the principal. And he came down to the principal and he said to the principal, "How do you know I was cheating on a test?" On the test, so he said, "Well, you had the exact same answers as the kid next to you." So this kid wasn't stupid. He said, "Well, how do you know he wasn't cheating off of me?" He said, "Well, there's one difference. On number 11, the kid next to you wrote, 'I don't know,' and you wrote, 'I don't know either.'" So, as I speak, I know sometimes I'm not too sure myself what the right approach is, and sometimes I hear from others. So I think we'll do this a little sort of interactive, okay? We'll make it a little bit more fun. So what I did was I created six sort of vignettes. Our focus is on parenting and specifically how to transmit values, how to raise children with the values that we want them to have. An increasingly difficult, as we'll allude to later, an increasingly difficult task. There probably has never been in the history of the world a time where parents have as little influence on their children as we do today. Someone once said that our effectiveness as parents began to erode with Alexander Graham Bell, because now suddenly outside the world can get inside. So if we fast forward to today, with the internet and with television and with the music and with Facebook, and which is turning things upside down, especially for teens, we are becoming less and less the fortress, if you will, or the moat to protect our children or to instill the values that we want for our children while there's major, major infiltrations. So it's a very difficult task today, and hopefully we'll get some little insight, but maybe we'll just begin a process that you'll capitalize on as we go along. Let me just get an idea, by the way. How many of you are raising, let's say, young preschool-age children? I can see some, right? Okay, good. Elementary school-age children? You can double dip, yeah? Adolescents? Okay, my condolences. Okay. You know, there's actually, so this is a little Torah insight. You know, our rabbis teach us that when Isaac was brought up for the sacrifice, the Akedah, when Abraham had to bring Isaac to the sacrifice, our rabbis say that Isaac was 37 years old. We always picture a little child. And the rabbis say that he was 37. So someone once asked, why, when he was 37, why didn't have Abraham sacrifice him when he was 17? And the answer, of course, is to sacrifice a 17-year-old is not a test. You know? So, okay. Anyway, okay. Now, okay, let's start with the first one. All right. Susan and Jerry, no names are picked randomly, by the way. I don't know if it happens to fit. It wasn't meant that way. Okay. Susan and Jerry are terribly upset by how their children are turning out. Though good students and generally obedient, they are obstreperous, whatever that means, and very aggressive with each other and peers. That's obstreperous. Okay. As parents, should they be examining themselves and their behaviors or assume that the cause rests elsewhere? Any thoughts? You have a problem, your child is not, in some respect, behaving in the fashion that you'd like them to. Is it your fault? Is it not your fault? What do you do with this? What's the first step? What are your thoughts? Oh wow, a bashful child. There's always one breaks dance. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, I'm an iceberg. Yeah, I mean, I don't. In a sense, I'll say the question's not the right question because whether it's them or outside, they're the parents are the ones that are responsible for figuring out and addressing it. Whether it comes
great
from
point.
their behavior or something outside of them.
Great point. Anyone hear Tversky's story? You'll know Abe Tversky, right? Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful Abraham Tversky story. Abraham Tversky was honored by his medical school a number of years ago. And he's at the collation after he was honored. And this old woman comes. And by the way, you know, he was raised in Milwaukee in the 20s and 30s. You know, and the question, how did, you know, his mother raised these children in the 20s and 30s, and yet they all turned out to be such luminaries and really following the tradition of their parents. How did they do this? So this old woman comes to him and says, Abraham, do you remember me? And of course he said no. Well, it turned out to be his second grade teacher in the Milwaukee public school system. And she remembered a story about his mother from about 60 years earlier. And what happened was, what he described, he told the story publicly, when it came time for the Christmas pageant, you know, he was the only Jewish kid, and of course, the pay is from a Yiddish-speaking home, came time for the Christmas pageant, she didn't know what to do. So she thought it over, and then she decided, you know what, she's going to put him into play, we're just going to give him a neutral role. So she gave him a role of like a clown. Sure enough, that night, Jefferson Tversky calls, she wants to have a meeting with the teacher. So the teacher assumes she's coming to complain about his being in the Christmas pageant. So she thought it up and she decided she was right and she was going to justify her position. So after school, Representative Tversky comes over and sit down and she says to the teacher, you know, Abraham's kind of short and he's kind of skinny. I wonder if the other kids are picking on him. And she says, true, he's one of the more slight kids, but he's holding his own. He's getting along with the other children. And she thanks her and she gets up to leave. And as she's out the door, the teacher says to her, you know, Mrs. Tversky, I thought you were coming here to complain about Abraham being in the Christmas pageant. And she said, if I'm raising my child in such a way that his being in the Christmas pageant will change him, then I'm not doing my job. And she remembered that 60 years later. So I think that's exactly the point you're making. In a way, it doesn't matter. We have a responsibility, and I think it's a very important point, and we'll talk about it some more, to raise the children irregardless of what's causing it. But sometimes knowing what causes it gives us a focus in terms of talk. Why don't you come and sit down? Is that, you know, the, oh, you know, Okay. All right. So it is. It's an important point. But where would be our focus if you're looking for a cause? Let's say. I mean, no matter what.
The first thing I would look at is the relationship between myself and my wife, and how we deal with each other, and the model, the way we model behavior to the children.
Very important point. So one of the things you do, in fact, one of the first things you may do is examine yourself. And especially if a lot of your children are having problems in a certain area, inadvertently, it's a good point, you may be, not intentionally, we're all well-meaning, but you may be modeling a certain behavior that, you know, they're following, you're not aware of it. I mean, it's like yelling at your child for yelling, you know. Or I remember once I was consulting with a psychologist in a special ed program, and we had a kid who was stealing supplies from the principal's office, and the principal knows when things were missing, and finally caught her. So the psychologist calls the parents and tells them what happened. The father says, I don't know why you have to do that. I'm always bringing stuff home from the office. So that's an example. Right.
Is that a true story or a joke?
Huh?
Is that a true story?
That's an absolutely true story. It's one of the few true stories I tell. Yeah. You know what Carol Wine says about the stories? You ever hear it? It's a great line. He says, all of my stories are true, just some of them haven't happened yet. So it's a very important point. So you do have to examine yourself. You have to look inside. Okay, was that the point you were going to make?
I was going to say, we don't know anything about Susan and Jerry from this. Like, mm-hmm. They could be aggressive themselves.
Right. They may be not aware. Very important point. Could there be another perspective?
You don't know the environment in school, how the kids...
Again, the point I made earlier, there are all sorts of other influences. What kind of TV shows are they watching? Huh? What kind of movies are they? So what kind of TV show? I'm sorry, I'll explain to you later, okay? What's the culture of the classroom, of the peer group? Okay, very important point. What else could be? Yeah.
It could be that the child actually, after going through all these things, needs further evaluation. Maybe they have ADHD or... No,
she must be a spy from right. Very important point. There's genetics, guys. It's an important point, and that's also part of it.
The other aspect of that also could be allergy. You know, allergies to other things that cause the chemical thing. That
pandas? You know about pandas?
I think I know what this is.
Yeah, pandas, very hot topic now in pediatrics, right. More than psychiatry, although a little bit in psychiatry, which is kids with strep. To develop behavioral problems, and sometimes perpetuate stuff. And some kids have chronic strep, and there's a whole debate about that. But there seems to be, in fact, many parents will describe that when their kids have strep, But they can tell the kid has strep and not just a regular sore throat because the kid starts misbehaving. So there's even medical ailments that can affect the child's behavior. Possibly. It's controversial because some say yes, some say no. The jury's still out in this one. But there are certainly genetics. If you want to get a research psychologist very excited, you get an MRA. Okay, what's an MRA? Anybody know what an MRA is? I got you on that one, huh? Okay. Monozygotic twins raised apart. Take identical twins. I'm serious. Take identical twins. One raised them here in New York, and one raised them in Idaho. And about 30, 40 years later, bring them together. And it is amazing how similar they are, and how the overlaps and the commonalities. So sometimes you can have a situation where you are doing everything right, and for all sorts of reasons that really have nothing to do with what you're modeling, although you have to consider that, how you're modeling or how you're parenting, the kid has a certain way about it. I can tell you that. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten families from the what we call the ultra-Orthodox community. To me, it sounds more like a gasoline, but the Brady community from Curious Joel or Williamsburg or something like that. And they have 10 kids or something like that, and 9 of them are superstars, and smack in the middle is a kid with a nose ring. And they'll say, I raise them all the same. It happens. It happens sometimes. So you have to look inside, and you also have to consider other factors. The fact is, if those of you may know or may not know, the Torah talks about the disobedient child, the Ben Sorer Moreb. Some of you may be aware of it. And when the Talmud suggests that this child has picture-perfect parents, parents are totally coordinated, don't have anything wrong with them, it's another child turned that wrong. That happens. And that some people say that's the lesson. That sometimes it is. So your first thing you have to do is examine yourself. And most importantly, what you may be inadvertently modeling, because we can't see ourselves. In fact, sometimes many people talk about parenting as a way of learning about yourself. Because by watching how your children are turning out, sometimes you learn about your own strengths and your own flaws. So you have to do a self-examination, but that doesn't necessarily mean, and sometimes I really am emphasizing that, is we tend to be in the field, one of the gifts we have from Sigmund Freud is we tend to be parent abusers. So we immediately assume that the parents are doing something wrong. It's not always the case. Sometimes it's something independent of the parents. Okay? Any other thoughts about that? Should we go on? Yeah.
Also, sometimes a child can have learning disabilities, whereby other kids are starting to pick on them in school and then they become aggressive as well.
That's right. Or they can't process language, so they don't know how to respond. Or the frustration from doing poorly in school, they act that kids are very imprecise with their behaviors, with the expression of their emotions. So when they're upset, they'll get angry. So you'll see sometimes that kind. My mother had a saying when I was growing up, I have too much respect for Yiddish, I try to repeat the original Yiddish, but it's something like when a poor man has a hernia, there's a pimple on it. When there's something wrong elsewhere, everything gets, so we in psychology call it the halo effect. But everything seems compromised. So it's absolutely true. Okay, you can't just jump to one conclusion. And by the way, that also applies if your friend or your siblings having a hard time with a kid. Don't naturally assume that they're doing something wrong. Sometimes or as I tell parents sometimes, not every child is equally easy to raise. Some children, you just wind them up and they go through life producing nakas. And other kids give you, beat your kishkas out the whole way. They later become school presidents, right? But they give you a very hard time. Okay, let's try the next one, okay? Avi and Shoshana have a wonderful marriage with much mutual respect. See, I don't like these kind of couples. It's not good for business. But they do have a different parenting style. Avi is more relaxed regarding rules and limits, while Shoshana is more stringent. Is it essential that they are fully coordinated? No more icebreakers, huh?
That's ours.
That's
ours.
So
disagree.
We don't do.
On the big things. On the big things, we try to coordinate.
As a purely yes or no answer, I believe the answer is no. But I think it seems to be, from our experience, crucial to understand and have an agreement of which are the things that you do have to agree on and which are the things you don't have to. And ideally, to talk these things out so that you're not doing it while you're in the middle of the problem.
kind of that being planned.
No, you guys took this course already, didn't
no.
you?
No, no, we had to
look at CRT.
Okay, very good answer.
With you.
Very good answer. Okay. Any other thoughts? Yeah?
Maybe just the issue is also not to conflict with each other in front of the...
Okay. I'm going to suggest to you that you even can. You can conflict in front of the child. I'm going to go out on a limb on this one. Any thoughts about that? Think
well, it adds to the coping skills. I mean, we're not perfect, so we've done it. But if you can stay calm, and in other words, we're frustrated. It's a big one in our house. We're frustrated. I'm frustrated. He's frustrated. You know, we're frustrated. And then he now said, I'm frustrated. You know, because otherwise, right. So that this is not always perfect. It's not
perfect. I have a friend who told me, I'm annoying.
Yeah.
Go ahead, yeah.
Stop there. Meaning someone that enforces the rule, be able to bring you back. You want to.
Very good.
You don't want to completely.
Yeah.
I think also it shows kids that you're allowed to disagree that things in life not always perfect, but let's see how we resolve conflict.
So right? What's important then when there is
the process? Difference? It's showing the kids the process.
Is respect.
Right, resolve.
If you differ with each other with respect, I'm suggesting not only is it not harmful, it may even be, as you said, helpful. In other words, you can't. We don't turn into clones of one another just because we get married. You know, it's something.
Yeah, I do differ. You know, in front of the kids.
Right, you're always right.
Because,
yeah.
That was mine.
Yeah, I am. It's. I think it's important because. Sometimes it's not, it doesn't make sense to wait till later because you need to deal with the problem now. You know, it's just like, you know, immediate reward or immediate punishment. You can't say, all right, you know, you'll do it this way, but later on, oh, I changed my mind. You can't. Can't go back to what, you know.
As long as you're not undermining each other.
Right.
And you're differing without sarcasm and without, you know, you're differing with respect and even with humor. By the way, oh, you knew to come ask me because, you know, I'm the easier one, right? You know, something like that. And the fact that two people cannot see eye to eye and still remain united is true unity. There's a very famous Rosh Hashiva or gift in the Hanukkah. We used to say that people confuse unity with unanimity. We think that the only way we can be united is if we all think the same way. That's a piece of cake. If you all think the same way, of course you're united. How are you united with people who don't think the same way? Now, again, and that's thinking maybe in terms of community, but, you know, it's true of a couple as well, that you can have different perspectives with you, and as long as you, you know, laugh about it, show each respect for one another, that's not the end of the world, okay, and as long as that, and you're not giving mixed messages, as you said, you know, it's understood that you have different points of view, and that's okay, and it's not radically different and everything, but some areas have differences, it's not the end of the world. Is that something you want to add to that? I thought you raised your hand. Okay. All right, go ahead.
It goes up in the future when the kid has to wants to speak to one of the parents about something, maybe feel more relaxed to speak to the one who was a little more lenient and that type
of get
it.
Of course, not stupid.
But right. I'm saying is even the things where confidentiality might be considered where the kid wants, doesn't know.
No, there's no confidentiality. No. Unless it has to do with menstruation and, things like that. There's no confidentiality.
You wouldn't bring it to the parents unless they feel they could have someone easier to talk to.
Right. Yeah, they may choose. Of course, they're always going to choose the more lenient one or the one that they have their way with, of course. The one they can charm.
Won't be as
right.
judgmental.
Right. The daddy's little girl is going to go, Dad, not Mommy.
Is it not as judgmental, maybe?
Right. But the fact that it's spoken about should be, but it should be understood that there's not none of this. Like I'm not going to, you know, you don't align yourself with a child against another parent. That's a big no. You don't do that. But again, you don't. And by the way,
I mean that be judgmental. If a kid has a problem or situation the kid has to deal with, mm-hmm. they'll be able to approach the parent who's more lenient or seems yeah. more lenient.
Oh, they have that option, you say?
Yeah.
That's true also. The child will choose the parent who can help them the most. And sometimes, by the way, that happens also. Sometimes one parent is better for one child than the other one. You know, they may be more similar to that parent. Their upbringing, their life experiences may be more similar. So there's nothing wrong with that. That's why parenting is a two-person job, ideally. I mean, it can be done by one if necessary, if the circumstances dictate it. But it is a two-person job. Absolutely, yeah.
She's saying it's okay if one parent can have a disciplinary moral.
As long as it's understood. As long as it's not undermining, not disrespect, there's nothing wrong with the wait till daddy comes home type of situation. If that suits you, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. If you're doing it, you know, you don't want it, you think he's wrong, and he's too strict, and he thinks you're too lenient, and you're at odds with each other, and you're undermining, you know, and you said, and one parent says one thing, and then you change, you know, you undercut that parent. That's very problematic.
Is that the next workshop?
That's the next workshop. Yes, right. Stay tuned. I do that because I want them not to leave. Yeah. Okay. And by the way, coordination doesn't just mean, you know, between parents. There's an issue of coordination between you and your community. You know. Yeah. Go ahead.
My question is like this: like sometimes my 7-year-old, my husband will say something to him, and my 7-year-old knows that I wouldn't have maybe made that din. But he'll come to me, and I said, "That's what Tati says. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like that's what I'm asking. It's like mm-hmm. I'm not going to get you off the hook, and I might not have necessarily done that, but I'm not going to tell you now. It's okay."
But if the kid knows that you feel differently about it, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, I feel differently, but you know, we have to, you know, yield to Tati on this. We have to give him to Tati with this. I don't know. I mean, a 7-year-old maybe not, but a little older you can, and certainly adolescents, by the way. It's very good for adolescents to hear that. Because adolescents are already starting to think in terms of relationships, and as you'll hear next time, couples can have differences and still get along. So it's good for them to see that. But again, it's done with mutual respect. Not like, oh, did your father say that again? You know, then of course, that's not good. That's a no-no. Okay? But also, as I said, coordination means with the community as well. You know, are what you're telling the child coordinated with what the school is trying to inculcate to the child? With what the greater world is trying to inculcate your child, and how do you negotiate those differences, or do you make those differences explicit? So the coordination goes beyond just between the parents. Okay, let's go to the next one. We'll get there later. That's okay. Ellen and Jerome are both professionals and conversant with the world around them. Perfect segue. Nevertheless, they are troubled by many of the messages and values transmitted to their children by the television. I'll explain to you later. Okay. Music, I'll explain to you later. Movie, I'll explain to you later. And the internet, I'll explain to you later. Okay. How should they handle that? Go ahead.
At home, we have, I'm sorry, as you can say, but also the internet is in the living room where nobody can have a heart to see on it. It's non-existent in my house because we tried it very sparingly and it was such problems. So you know, if you want the computer, you can have it, but you know that it's no privacy on the internet.
Okay, well, so certainly you can, there are extreme positions. I guess you could take one position and just sort of hand the kids over to the medium. Others' positions don't have it at all. Most of us sort of strike a balance. So if you're striking a balance, you're allowing it with certain limits and certain, you know, certain amount of containment. Because the problem you can run into is, well, what about everybody? By the way, there's a certain disease that children have. It's a psychiatric disorder called delusions of unanimity. Otherwise known as everybody else's parents lets them syndrome. Now the reason why they can do this is because when they're the exact same moment that they're telling you that everybody else's parents lets them do such and such, the other child is telling their parents everybody else's parents lets them, including you. So it's a very, you know, you have to be aware of that. And in fact, I always say to parents that, you know, our children are spending the whole day in school plotting how to undermine us. You know, they meet at recess, and we don't talk to the other parents. The important point is to be really in touch with especially with younger kids, to be in touch with the parents of your kids' friends. Because if you're coordinated, and you'll be surprised how many parents feel the same way you do. You take that away from them. Yes.
So the thing is also, I mean, with the computer is that, you know, having two kids in high school, that even if I say no internet, but we have projects to do. And when my daughter gets home at 7 o'clock at night,
they have a cell phone?
No.
Oh, okay. Because they find if they do, they can find today almost every cell phone can get on the internet. And they can go to friends and they can, you know. And the other thing which I thought you were looking at also is that it comes to what happens when you have a certain position, but most of the other kids, you know, you don't want your kid to have a cell phone, but all the other kids are starting to have cell phones. Do you have to give them a cell phone? Do you say no, we're different? Where do you draw this line? Mm-hmm. Go ahead, you want to say?
What we do with our teenagers, I monitor on the computer forensics person. And
And right now, just if you're interested in monitoring what goes on, Norton has just opened a new service. It's free right now, which will allow you to monitor all of the sites that your child goes to.
It's like Spectrum.
No, it's not.
Spectrum?
It's different. It's very different. Because you can monitor from anywhere. You don't have
Spectrum.
To, you know,
you mean it's the virtual, because you've already had that service for years. So you're talking about your virtual.
No, this is new. They just rolled this out.
For the user, but when you used to be, it used to be IT, you used to be able to do that.
If you're in IT, you can do it on a net.
Right.
But so what you can do now is you can be at work, and if you know your child is home, you can go online to the Norton site. The Norton site is monitoring.
Right, they act
home.
As the net server.
Now. I see. Yeah. Yeah. But the point is that usually we have to strike some compromise, you know, that either the computer in a public place or that there is some oversight as far as television and movies, that you have some say. They just don't go to any movie they want. They don't just watch. You know, by the way, you know how much TV the average American child watches? Anybody know?
4 hours a night.
4.5 hours a day. They spend more time in front of the TV set than any other activity, including speaking to parents, including school. The only thing they do more spend more hours on the TV watching is sleep. Yeah. So the TV is the major acculturating, form of acculturation today in America, in the average American home. But TV can be, you can co-view, you can watch TV with your kids, see what they're watching, allow shows, do not allow shows, or at least convey to the child that some of the messages, and it's a very powerful form, conveyor of messages, that these are not our messages. And teach your children also how these messages are conveyed. I want to tell you something that, although I'm very flattered to be here today, the truly brilliant psychologists are not spending their Sunday mornings at the Bialystok Synagogue in the Lower East Side. The truly brilliant psychologists today are sleeping late and probably playing golf, and Monday morning they go to a place called Madison Avenue where they, in very ingenious ways, try to compel and convince your children to purchase things or believe in things that they need, like a home ahead. And they do it very effectively and very inadvertently, so you can't even see it. And one of the things we need to teach our children is how we're being manipulated by the media. I used to play a game with my kids, which was called What's the Kunz? And we would watch a commercial, or we would look better on an advertisement in a magazine. And how they convince you, what are they doing? And you'll be surprised, even all the sexual innuendos that you can't see immediately, but when you study it, are there trying to compel and trying to convince you to purchase items or to own things that you don't need, or to, in a show, to believe certain value systems. And it's something, yeah, if you like it, if you like what the show is communicating, leave it alone. But if you don't, say something to your child. Yeah.
What can you do about a cell phone? It's sort of private. You can't listen in or...
Okay, the SpecPro does, I mean, you may know better than I do, has a program you put into the cell phone where you get regular emails in terms of how the cell phone is being, who's being called, who's calling your child, and what sites you're going on.
I'm talking about the internet. I'm just making regular phone calls. You don't know who they're talking to.
You can. Oh, you mean you can know the number. You may not know the person.
You know the number, but you don't know.
It's really a subject that should be addressed in and of itself. But in today's world, we do have to teach our children internet safety. And to have, again, not to be controlled, or technology safety, not to be controlled by it, but for us to control it. I mean, Facebook is scary as can be, yeah.
I think it kind of gets back to what your story before. Like, if my child being in the Christmas pageant has been affecting them, they haven't done my job. I think that applies to all these other things that we've been talking about. Like, our job is to raise the kid so that they can be exposed to something adverse or something that we don't agree with. And we've given them enough judgment and skills to be able to handle it.
Exactly. In other words, that's what I was trying to say earlier. We're living in this world.
Yeah.
We're not cloistering ourselves. So you live in this world, but you've been actively involved. Don't hand your child over. How the scalper, yeah.
Well, I figured, like, we have preschool children in 10 years. As you're talking calmly about co-seeing and co-sitting with your children watching television, it's going to be that way for the internet press. Facebook will have moved to another, will have spiraled to whatever. So we need to tools. I can't there's no way it's going to be absolutely no hour.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just not. And so I need those tools of viewing also. But, you know, and also for just, I guess for everyone else to just say that you can't, not to be afraid of it and to be able to be with it, be with them.
It's a very good way of putting it, not to be afraid. And the interesting thing about the internet is it's a medium that the child is so much more at home with than we are.
Yeah.
And therefore, we're really at a disadvantage. But we really have to, as much as possible, educate ourselves and know. Mm-hmm. And, for example, it really bears on marriage, but I have a niece and nephew who have a very interesting policy with the internet, that she has half the password and he has the other half. So they can never get on the internet unless the other one knows. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting, you know, a set of safeguard for them to feel secure. But there are things you have to do. Yeah.
Won't children feel like their parents don't trust them?
Right.
Like, won't they feel Won't they feel like a lack of privacy, and they'll feel like my parents doesn't trust me?
And they'll feel loved.
They will?
They will feel loved because we're there to protect them. I'm not suggesting that we break into their diary, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not suggesting that we listen to every phone conversation they have with every single person. I once had a patient have a very interesting response. She had her first, I'll get you in a minute, she had her first child, first baby, and they handed her the baby, and she looked at the baby and she started to cry. And most people thought she was moved by having a child. But she said later, she said, no, she thought to herself everything she did that her parents didn't know about. And she cried for everything this child will do that she won't know. It's brilliant. It really is. Yeah, it really is.
If I say, the predators that are out there, I mean, I used to leave the state. You know what I mean? Like, leave where I was and go, and I have straight A's and everything. My mother never knew a poor thing. So I'm just saying, like, the predators, the way people can be on the internet, you have to, I mean, it's not a safety. I had too much privacy.
I have a close friend who really should be able to present all by football. He's an Orthodox Jewish police officer who does internet crime, and he spent a big part of his career making believe he's a 14-year-old girl in Catholic school, and he would nab predators left and right. And he said if everyone he caught, there were 100 he couldn't catch. Just go on Facebook and
I think drawing on that point, we can't misunderstand the way the young kids community.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, I went out with my friends.
Right.
And there were no parents listening in on our conversations, and nobody had a problem with that. And we all did things together, did things in the privacy. Some of the things might have been disgusting to our parents if they heard it, and yet we all graduated mm-hmm. and didn't die and didn't go to jail. To a teenager today, I believe it's no different for them to be texting each other. It is not. It is not on Facebook. It is not.
All right,
well,
we can't. I'll tell you why.
This is how they can...
You're 100% right. But it is much easier for someone with nefarious intentions to disguise him or herself on the internet than it is in person. So when you were out there, and you were taught that if somebody comes over to you and offers you candy, or if somebody comes up, pulls up in a car and says, "Hey kid, how do you get to so-and-so street?" Then you don't go close to the car; you go from a distance. That's harder to do when someone gets on. Well, you have to
stop. Really, what somebody wants to know what someone is who their kid is calling.
It could calling is another. That's a separate issue. What we're talking about here, on the internet, is that predators look for super kids and look to hook up with them, and they can be anything they want. They can be a 14-year-old Catholic girl when they're really a 52-year-old Orthodox Jew.
Absolutely.
And nobody, you try to pull that off on the street, you know? Yeah.
I mean, how many adults are duped into this Nigeria type of... you're talking about adults? No. Okay, that's just an example, but there's so many hundreds of things.
It's okay. Nobody's saying don't have the internet. I'm just saying, but be educated. Educate your child and be on top of it. Not overly intrusive. So to answer your question, not overly intrusive. You don't know every conversation. You don't know everything. But enough so that they're safe. Yeah.
Okay. Is it when you think about intrusives too with the cell phone? At another workshop I went to, the person said he gives his child, you know, lovely way and so on, but the chargers are in his room, so he knows like he's going to sleep at 12. His daughter or son won't be on the phone until 2, 3, 5.
And they may try to be on the phone until 3, 5. Kids misbehave, and that's okay. And if they're talking to their friend and they're just bad mouthing their teacher, that's fine. But if they have a collective call and they're doing cyberbullying or cyber suicide, I mean, it's a subject in and of itself. It's a risky medium. Yeah. And by the way, part of the problem is it has an air of respectability. When you left your home, I'm going to address you here. When you left your home and went out there in the world, there's sort of understanding. When you left the house, it's a different place. The computer is right in your bed, right in your living room, and it gives it a sense of safety, a full sense of safety, which is it's really a public place. It's really a public thoroughfare. Yeah, go ahead. Somebody else had. Yeah, I'm sorry. Were you next?
Okay, I'm sorry. The problem, I work for the Brooklyn District Attorney.
Uh-huh.
I'm not doing active investigations anywhere. I have a different role in the office. But we also.
What's his name? I know the guy then.
Charles.
No, not Charles. The guy who does the internet crime stuff. O'Connor.
Sean.
No, Sean. No. Okay, I'm
going to. You're thinking of the ADA. We actually send people out to do education.
Right.
That's one of the things that we do from our office. But it's a huge problem today. I was in the High Technology Crime Investigators Association for a number of years, and it was at the early part of the internet, and it started to develop very quickly. It is a huge problem, and you have it in your home. One of the things you have to remember, however, is that while you can set up controls in your home, you have to be aware of where your child goes and what his friends do as well.
Cafes? Sure.
Okay, and you can put all the blocks you have. People used to say to me that they blocked everything on their kid's computer, and I would just pick out one of those.
Right.
The old-fashioned discs. I said, did you block his ability to go to Johnny's house and download stuff and bring it home? And nobody ever thought of that.
I don't want to get too caught up, but that's on subject in itself. Let me take one more, and then we'll go in. Yeah,
I have a question that kind of spans several areas. You mentioned what you do when everyone else's parents allows the child a particular technology. Now, our children are preschool age, and we don't have this issue yet.
The biggest industry on the internet today is in the computer industry is the tailor programs for the preschool age children.
Right.
So, even keyboards.
Right. So we don't have the problem with technology just yet, but we had the problem with candy. Right. Mm-hmm. Our child had no candy until she was 2 years old, and she didn't miss it because she didn't know that there was anything to miss. It wasn't until she went to school and saw all the other kids with candy that she wanted it, and we couldn't be the only parents to say no because then she would have an unhealthy association with eating candy. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I do when parents aren't looking. So we had to start giving in. And now she's got a sweet tooth like you can't imagine. And I'm wondering what to do when the next thing comes up, which is going to be technology.
Dental plan. you're right. And essence, you do have to, you can, you know, the Talmud says, my bloom is silken, that stolen water is sweet. You can, by being too stringent, you can make it even more attractive.
And we recognize that, which is why we started giving it
to
candy.
So you strike a compromise. And here's an important element I alluded to earlier. Know the friend's parents. And you'll be surprised how many times if you call them and say, I had the same question with less than if you have a collective agreement that you're limiting it to one candy a day or something like that, then you already have a cluster of children and that makes and you can do this the one they're young. I'll tell you a story. It happened to me in a second. I was in Los Angeles about eight years ago. And the rage at that time was the so-called professional wrestling, which is not professional, not wrestling. It's like a grotesque display of unsportsmanlike violent behavior done by acrobatics for really not being hurt, you know? And all the kids were watching it, you know? And I was speaking about TV, and afterwards one parent comes and says, you know, my kid watches this wrestling thing, I can't stand it, but all the other kids do. And then another parent comes, you know, my kid's watching this wrestling thing. And then I got like 6-7 parents together, and they agreed between themselves, we're gonna forbid this wrestling at that show. So just talk to the other parents, you know, you'll be surprised. I mean, everybody, I'm sure most of your fellow parents agree about the candy. So just talk to them, make sure, as I'm saying, the kids are all day plotting against us, let's get together. That was even the playing field, you know? Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
A lot of this also about the relationship you have with your kids.
Yeah.
If you cultivate a really wonderful relationship where they enjoy you and you enjoy them, they're going to do things behind your back, a little bit here, a little bit there. The things they're going to do, but they always have a certain image of you and a certain respect and a certain...
I'm glad you said that. There has to be, in fact, I think it's a good segue into the next one. There has to be a very... If you have... For discipline to work, You have to be the context of a loving relationship. That the main motivator is, I don't want to disappoint this person I love.
Exactly. You know what, even if they go to do something, it's almost in a way, a little bit healthy for a kid to do something behind the parents' back.
Sure.
To exert their
I still do it. My father just turned 90, yeah.
Right. It's okay. But as long as they have that image of the parent that they love, that they don't want to disappoint, so if they're going to come back,
thank you.
They're going to exert their independence.
Very important point. Apropos to our next vignette, okay? A university history professor, Robertson's interests in childhood are always intellectual. He doesn't know where his sports-obsessed son comes from. Besides looking for every opportunity to play, he knows stats backwards and forwards, and literally devours the sports section of the daily paper. Should Robert try to share these interests with his child, and how will that benefit him? It's a very good summary in terms of what you just talked about.
Who's the him?
Him is the child. The child is a sports maniac. The father is a history professor.
My husband never went to a Mets game until last year.
This is a Mets fan. I can see it. Right?
Should the parent try to understand the child's interest and not the other one? Should the parent not? You're asking,
should the parent really start this history professor who couldn't care less?
Should he start?
Should he start making an interest in baseball because he's got this kid and they're saying?
Yes.
Satas, as I mentioned, my father told a very beautiful story about my father. I won't tell him this story, so I can honor him. You know, said he just turned 90. I grew up in a community that were all basically immigrants, mostly Holocaust survivors. In fact, I had one friend who had American-born parents, and he once asked his parents, how come they speak English funny? We were baseball fans, and we wanted none of our parents anything about it. I still remember one of my friend's parents loading us up into the car, taking us to Yankee Stadium, buying the tickets, sitting us down, taking out the Allgemeine Journal, and reading this, you know, and what did he care about this, you know? So I reached that age, and went to my father, and I said, I want to go to a baseball game. And he said to me, but I don't know anything about baseball. And we took a 2.5-hour Shabbos afternoon walk, and I explained baseball to him. And it's a complicated sport, you know? And he has a good, well-developed thumb, my father, so he has questions. You know, you can steal second, but you can't steal second. The guy's in second, the guy steals third. And you're striking, you know, a foul ball's a strike, but if it's a foul ball, then it's not a strike. Unless the catcher catches it, then it is a strike. You know, and then he can throw him out, and he's asking questions, and we're going on and on and on. And he wouldn't go to that game until he understood it. And as soon as I lost interest, he lost it. He would not go to a baseball game unless he understood baseball. And he watched it with me. Why? Why is that important? Yeah. Any thoughts? Why is that important?
It was important to me.
And that creates that atmosphere that you can then they want your values. They want to be like you. Yeah.
Okay, I have a question that's different, not sports related, but and I have this issue at home.
Okay.
My husband goes to one shul and my son has been going with him until a certain age, and now he decided recently he doesn't like that shul, he wants a different one. And if he takes him to his shul, my child does not want to go.
How old is he?
So he is going to be bar mitzvah next month.
Okay, perfect age.
And,
he's right on track.
He does not want to go to his shul. He'd rather stay home than go to his shul. And I think that father should go with his son to the son's choice, only to keep him going.
Want to watch me go out on a limb?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It is?
At that age, it's very, and it's not a talk to be, adolescence is a whole subject in and of itself, but it's a very natural, normal thing to want to be distinct and to want to be different.
If the distinctness, I go with my father, he should go with me.
Oh, that's what he thinks. Oh, I'm sorry. I disagree. I side with you then. I'm sorry.
You know what I'm saying? But you side with me that the father should go where the son wants to.
No. Let the father go to his show, the kid go to his show.
Right.
Yeah, of course. That's being Jewish. You know? Who goes to the same show? You know?
No, that's another option.
Right. As soon as
if the father wants to be with his son, then he should go to where the son
goes. No, he should go to his show, because then if the father goes to the son to that show, the kid's not going to like that show anymore. That guy's going to show. Let him have his own show. You know, if you let him go, he'll come back and go with you also. That's normal as can be. There's a natural, normal need which reaches a crescendo in adolescence to be a distinct individual, to be different. It's actually a human need, and in fact, it's captured as most things are in the Torah. You know, as soon as the family is created, right? The family's created. Now, what's the first thing the Torah says? Okenya zovisha zovives imo. Henceforth, a child shall abandon his father and mother. It's growing up. They want to be their own person. There's nothing. As long as he wants to go to shul, that's great. Let him go to the. Let him please. You know, let him go to the other shul. You go to your shul, and let him tell you how much better his shul is. Absolutely. Get back to up here. You make your child interest. You take an interest in your child. You're leaving in the morning, and the kid says, "Mom, there's a spelling bee today. You have 14 meetings, and you have a huge trial, and the last thing in your mind is a spelling bee. This is why God created these things." Immediately, as soon as you go out, at the time that you're supposed to come back, with an alarm, say, "Ask Sarah about the spelling bee." And when you come home that night, and the PTA was knocking you over the head, "Oh yeah, the spelling bee," you're going, "Hey Sarah, how's the spelling bee?" You know, she feels like a million bucks. And she feels loved. She has no idea that you have no idea about the spelling bee. She has no idea that you know how to spell. But you know, that she feels that this is important to you, and you made, and that's extremely important. And when you have that kind of relationship, then it's gonna foster. Then they're gonna want your values. They're gonna want to be like you. Extremely important. Do you want the conclusion of my father's story? It's a funny conclusion. Since we're here, okay. So then I said I want to go to basketball games. My father said, "No basketball." So I told him basketball. Then I said I want to go to a hockey game. And hockey was easy for him to understand because he knew soccer from Europe. So we went to a hockey game. And this was, as they say in French, it wasn't a hockey game. It was a Ranger game. There were fights. Guys were being carried out, you know, unconscious. There were fights in the aisle. People were throwing beer bottles at each other, you know. And I saw my father didn't like it. We took the subway home. He didn't say a word. And finally we come home. And mother says, "Nu, how was it?" And he shrugged and says, "Goyish and nachas." That was the last hockey game we ever went to. But the point is, like a timepiece. But anyway, but again, he made his interest, my interest his own. Okay, let's do one or two more because I think we're running out of time. Due to the staggering economy, Jimmy and Karen find themselves spending more and more time at the office. The children's days are filled with numerous after-school programs, and the housekeeper attends to most of their needs. Does this development have a bearing on their children and transmission of values? Everybody's nodding.
And the kids start speaking Spanish.
Right. Okay. But not only that, very important point, and it gets more and more important as the norm becomes both parents working, and as unfortunately as the economy is demanding more and more. And one of the results that I'm seeing as a result of these economic problems is many parents are much more hesitant to take time off, to miss meetings, etc., because they feel vulnerable on the job. But time with your child. The research is overwhelming that parents who eat dinner with their children every night have practically zero occurrences of substance abuse, have much fewer behavioral problems. In fact, the reading scores of children who eat dinner with their parents every night are higher than the children who don't. Now, it's not always realistic. I mean, especially in today's world and with commutes, etc. But you have to be very deliberately make sure you spend time. This plan doesn't have to come with an agenda, doesn't have to be with an appointment. But as much as humanly possible, given the realities of the demands today, just spend time with children. Just plain time. Before they go to sleep, I'll tell you one very beautiful story. I remember once speaking at a parenting program, and after I was done, a woman around my age came to me, and as soon as she, started talking to me, the tears welled up, and she told me that her father just passed away, and she wants to tell me a story about her father. So let me paint the picture for you, all right? Let's say it's Friday afternoon, it's close to Shabbos, and you just came home from work and you're about to run into the shower and you say, "Oh my God, I don't have asparagus. We have to have asparagus, I have to get asparagus." So you're going to run out to the closest vegetable place, grab asparagus, run home and hopefully, et cetera, and suddenly, you're about to get into the car and then your 4-year-old says, "Can I come?" And put it in the car seat, put it in the stroller, right? No, that stuff. So no matter how frantic or busy her father was, every time she came and said, "Daddy, can I come along to see the shore?" That was her memory of her father. Okay, so really important, essential, that you spend and create situations. Today we have to create them, where there's time with the child, time, and just as I said, doesn't have to be an agenda. Just time with them, more likely to absorb your values. Okay, and go on to the last one. Okay, whenever Rachel and Joshua try to discuss anything to do with their behavior or outlook, their adolescent daughters immediately assume this interested look. You know that look. invariably rolling their eyes, you know, the eye roll, you know, those adolescent kids, right? And emitting comments such as, you know, it's not the 80s, it almost seems futile to even broach subjects with them. Are they better off talking to them less, or should they keep trying? Keep trying? Why?
Shows interest.
They show interest? Rolling the eye.
I'll
show the parents. Okay, good point. Very important point. Yeah? Okay. We maintain, no matter how.
No, I would just say, like, try to find, you know what I mean? Try to do it in a way that, like, let's say, get your kid into interest in you doing, like, do it around, like, the table when you're sitting and making.
Have you raised adolescents?
Yes. Thank God.
We'll talk afterwards, because I haven't figured that way out yet.
Yeah, have them, like, help you in the kitchen, and then, like, we'll just do something with them, and then sort of, like, mention it.
Okay. Well, what if it's a subject that every time you bring it up, not everything, you bring up a subject, whatever, you know, that new word, yeah?
And I haven't raised adolescents either, so I can be wrong.
But you were once one.
I was once one. Yeah. Following what you said about it shows that a parent is interested, you may feel like your efforts to do these things aren't getting anywhere, but when there comes the time that your child wants to ask you something or needs your advice or needs you, they will remember that you were there for them. Perhaps your futile efforts will help the next one.
Both comments, very important. Number one, you always maintain your parental dignity. Just because a kid doesn't listen, or just because they're going to defy you, and even if you don't have leverage, which happens sometimes with adolescents, right? Your kid is 6'4", captain of the wrestling team. Well, what are you going to do? You know, like, you know, like, you know, what are you going to do? You know, you have a position. You don't have to have even, you know, especially with the teenagers. Listen, I'm a parent still. This is what I think you're alluding to, and I still feel this way. You don't listen to me. There's nothing I can do, but I'm still a parent. So you don't compromise anything. The other thing, which I think was alluded to here, and that's a very important, and there's tons of psychological research to show that that's the case. Even though your kids act like they don't give a darn what you're saying, and even though everything they say suggests that your words are meaningless, the research shows that what you say is very important to them. It's overwhelming, the research, that all these things, and then that parents underestimate how important they are, especially to the teenage children. That when they ask parents, are your kids really listening to you? Or are you going to bring this up? By the way, especially with sexual matters. Are you going to bring this up? And most parents give up. They throw in the towel because they're not going to listen to me anyway. And when they interview the kids really wish the parents would and would take an active position. So just because they're giving you that public display of disinterest and not caring, or like, you know, dismissing you as some sort of dinosaur from some other century, they're really hearing you, and it's there. So keep saying it. Keep being a parent. Yeah?
What if we change the subject a little bit, and it's not rolling your eyes, and it's a younger child, mm-hmm. and you have a tantrum?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They won't listen. How do you deal with that?
Okay. Tantrums, by the way, it's important. I'm glad you brought that up. Tantrums, when they're in the throes of the tantrums, leave them alone. You're not going to get to them. The worst, you know, once they're in the throes of the tantrums, the best thing is just really face it, ignore them, or give them time out, and sometimes you even have to, you know, stand there and make sure they stay in the room. Some of the younger kids, they can still do that. The trick with the tantrum is to try to catch it before it happens. In other words, if you're about to tell them that they're prone to tantrums, and you're about to tell them something they're not happy with, tell them, you know, tell them that if you can handle what I'm about to tell you without having a tantrum, there'll be a special little prize or something like that. Try to teach them to contain the tantrum before the tantrum takes them over. Once they're in the throes of the tantrum, then the worst thing to do is try to punish them or scream at them or whatever they just make a tantrum. You have to wait it out, and then afterwards discuss what happened with them. There's a very nice book by Ross Green, Explosive Child, who talks about that. I would recommend that if a kid is prone to a tantrum, so he has some good suggestions.
Explosive child?
Wherever the child is, wherever he is, remove him first, and then don't deal with him.
Right,
get him out of
where he's on. Yeah, that's
right. I'll take him out of the room, okay.
R-O-S-S, and then Green, I think.
Stable himself.
Very well, very popular. Yeah. Okay.